Chapter 8, The Great Dynasties of China. Yangxian unites North and South. The Muslim Empire spread up from Arabia over towards the land that used to belong to Rome. It spread down to Egypt and North Africa. It became an enormous empire. But far to the east was an even bigger empire, the Empire of China. In ancient times, China had been ruled by one emperor. But over time, China had divided into two different countries, the North and the South. People in the North and the South didn't like each other. Southerners insisted that the Northern king wasn't a real king, only an imposter. And Northerners thought that people in the South were ignorant and crude. One Northerner wrote, "The South is hot and infested with bugs. People and animals live together like frogs and toads in the same hole. People in the South like the company of fish and turtles, but they don't know anything about art and music." Yangxian was a general in the Northern Army. He thought that China should be one country again. So he led the soldiers of the North down to attack the Southern king and his army. The South fought back, but the Northern army was too strong to resist. Soon Yangxian controlled both North and South. He became the new emperor of China and founded a new dynasty. Do you remember what a dynasty is? It is one family that rules a country for years and years. Yangxian founded the Sui dynasty to rule over one united China. Yangxian and his descendants in the Sui dynasty wanted to keep northern and southern China together, but they had a problem. In China, wide, deep rivers run from the sea in the west all the way over into the east. Travelers who wanted to go from the north down to the south had to cross the Yellow River. And anyone who wanted to go from the south up to the north had to cross the Yangtze River. These rivers were hard to get across, especially in the spring, when floods made them even wider and wilder. The Sui emperors knew that if people from the north and people from the south couldn't meet, talk to each other, and trade with each other, China might divide again. So they decided to dig a new river that ran from north to south, between the Yellow and the Yangtze rivers. This new river would be called the Grand Canal. The Grand Canal took years to dig by hand. The Sui emperors needed money to build it, so all of the families in China had to pay their taxes 10 years ahead of time. The emperors also forced millions of people to work on the canal. Every man between 15 and 50 had to spend months digging and building. And every family had to send one woman, one child, and one old man to work on the canal, too. Finally, the canal was finished. The emperor, Yangdi, decided to go for a ride on it to celebrate. He took his family and all the members of his court with him. It took 62 boats to hold them all. And since Yangdi didn't want to row, he forced workers to pull his boat with ropes. It took 80,000 men to pull all of those boats. The Grand Canal did make it easier for the people of China to go from south to north and back again. Now merchants could sail up and down the canal with rice, pottery, and other goods. Some families even lived on boats. They ate and cooked and slept on boats. The mothers of these canal families tied bamboo life jackets onto their babies until they learned how to swim. But the Grand Canal also made the people of China angry with the emperors of the Sui. Many people died building the canal because they had to work hard without much food, in cold and in damp, all year long. Families had become poorer because men had been forced to build the canal instead of tending their farms and doing their own work. And everyone hated the extra taxes. Finally, the Chinese people rebelled against Yangdi and killed him. He was the last Sui emperor. The dynasty founded by Yangxian had kept China together, but lost its throne. Writing books by hand. We learned that the years after the fall of Rome are called the Middle Ages, and that in England these years are also known as Dark Ages. Do you remember why we call this time the Dark Ages? Most people in England couldn't read or write, so they didn't write down stories and histories. When Augustine and his companions came to England, They told the Anglo-Saxons about Christianity, but they also taught them how to read and write. They wanted these new Christians to be able to read the Bible. Monks in monasteries also thought that reading and writing were important. After all, they spent a large part of every day reading the Bible and books written by religious men. But back in the Dark Ages, books weren't as easy to make as they are today. Bookmaking was a long, complicated process, and only the monks were skilled enough to make beautiful books. In the Dark Ages, you couldn't just go to a store and buy paper. So the monks began by making a special paper called parchment out of animal skin. They put cow or sheep skins in running water, such as a stream or river, for several days. Then they soaked it again in a barrel filled with water and lime, a chemical that loosened the hair on the skin, for several days more. Finally, they would stretch out the skin, scrape the hair off with a knife, and then attach it to a frame so that it could dry. But that wasn't all. Once the skin was dried, the monks would take it off the frame, wet it again, and rub it with a rough stone. One medieval book tells us that the best way to wet the skin was to take a mouthful of beer and then spit the beer all over the skin. When the skin had been dried all over again, it was time to make the ink by mixing soot with water and the sap of trees. The monk had to prepare quill pens by pulling feathers out of a goose or swan's wing, soaking the feathers in water, and scraping the tips. Then the parchment had to be cut into rectangles, folded over to make pages, and stitched together to make booklets. Finally, it was time to write out the words. All books were written out by hand. The monks worked all day in special rooms called scriptoriums. They made copies of the Bible and other important books by copying them out one letter at a time. Each letter was carefully written in the monks' best handwriting. The books copied by the monks weren't just black letters on white pages. The monks decorated the pages of their books with beautiful colors. They made paints by mixing their colors with egg whites, often real gold and silver, beaten into sheets so thin they could float on the air, were attached to the page as part of the picture. Sometimes a picture took up an entire page. Sometimes it was painted just in the margin or at the top of a page. And sometimes just the first letter on a page was painted and leafed with gold. Writing out long books by hand was hard, slow work. An expert monk might copy out 2 or 3 books in a year, working 8 hours every day. So there weren't very many books in the Middle Ages, and books were valuable. After all, they took months of labor. Often books were chained onto library shelves so that people could only read them standing up, and you certainly couldn't check them out. Monks weren't supposed to talk in the scriptorium. They were supposed to pay close attention to what they were doing. But monks got bored. We can still read some of the books written by hand in the Middle Ages, and we can see that sometimes monks wrote messages to each other and even drew silly pictures in the margins of their books. "I'm cold," one monk wrote. "I wish we had a bigger fire, but Brother John won't let us." Another monk wrote, "I wish I were finished. I have to go to the bathroom." And a third monk drew a little mouse on the edge of his book and wrote, "Curse that mouse." Maybe the mouse had stolen some of his dinner.